of charity versus privatization. It's a question of charity versus solidarity,
yes.
by people who would unite with an African revolutionary process. But for the African revolutionary process to occur, African people ourselves must lead. We must lead. We must say this is the future we're looking for, and we're going to have it regardless of what it takes to make that happen.
Yes, yes. I'm talking with Chairman Amalia Sitela, the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, about the party's participation in a Congress in Spain, Huelva, Spain. I want to let folks know that you can participate in this discussion by calling in at country code 001-727-824-5719. Again, that's country code 001-727-824-5719. And you can also participate by emailing us at dj@ahururadio.com. I want to take a short break and come right back with more discussion here on Africa Live.
African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omalia Sitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the U.S., the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
Shop, donate, and volunteer at Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles for great deals on high-quality used furniture and unique treasures. Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles is a non-profit used furniture and collectibles store with outlets in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Oakland, California, and St. Petersburg, Florida. Uhuru Furniture Stores are an institution of the African People's Education and Defense Fund for genuine economic development for the African community. All donations are tax-deductible. Volunteer at Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles to be part of a great community of people who have a true desire to change the conditions of life for the African community. To locate the store nearest you, visit apedf.org and click the Uhuru Furniture link. That's APEDF, the acronym for African People's Education and Defense Fund. Or simply Google Uhuru Furniture.
Uhuru, welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we are talking with Chairman Omalia Sitela about the participation of the African People's Socialist Party in the first Congress, the first Congress entitled Africa and the West, the Need for New Relationships, Congress that was sponsored by the European Foundation for North-South Cooperation. Chairman, there were some things we were talking about during the break.
Yeah, I just think that there's something interesting about the history of the region where this conference was held. This Congress was held. It was in Huelva, which is in southern Spain, and it's considered a part of Andalusia. And Andalusia was influenced in southern Spain a lot by the presence of Africans and Arabs. You know, historically, and it is also the area from which Columbus left when he made his trip to what they now characterize as the New World, and it is a region that's that the people in Spain you know, recognized as having a particular kind of history, such as what I've suggested, the presence of Arabs and Africans over a long period of time, Andalusia. So I just think that's, you know, something of some interest that folk might have. In fact, they have a replica of some of the ships, of the ships that Columbus left in, I had no interest in seeing it. I think it's some kind of tourist thing. I really had no interest myself in checking it out, but I just think it was a point of interest that they would have that, and that even during the Congress itself, there was a constant reference to Andalusia by the Spaniards who participated from there. And there were people, like there were mayors from various cities in that area who participated in the Congress, and again, they recognized some special significance about this area that they call Andalusia because of that past. Yeah.
In relationship to that, were you all able to get from the Congress any idea of like the conditions that African people face in there in Spain?
It's a difficult situation on a couple of fronts. On the one hand, Spain doesn't have the same kind of history in Africa, for example, as most of the European imperial powers. Spain is notorious for the terror and brigandage and rape and pillage of the Americas and the Philippines. It's interesting because even the Philippine takes his name from what was first Prince Philip and then became King Philip of Spain, right? So, and the fact that you find all these Spanish-speaking people throughout the Americas is evidence of Spain's colonial legacy, a legacy of slavery and colonialism. You find the Africans who are located in the Spanish-speaking territories in South America, that's a part of the legacy of Spain. But in Africa itself, you have what they characterize as Equatorial Guinea, which is all rich with maybe 500,000 or a little more in terms of the population. And perhaps it's such a small population, perhaps because of slavery. You know, then there's, you know, like Morocco, and I think it was the Spanish Sahara. So you know, that's a part of the legacy of Spain in Africa is not as obvious. Its colonial legacy is not as obvious in Africa as it is in some other places. And in my opinion, it allows Spain to have a kind of soft imperialist approach, as opposed to much of Europe. And in fact, you would hear during this Congress people who participated who would try to distinguish Spain's legacy from that of Europe in terms of what it has done in Africa. Now, a difficult thing in Spain, as it is in most of Europe and in this country, North America as well, the United States of North America particularly, but also in other areas of North America, Canada, is the question of immigration, the immigrant question. And the immigrant question, for notwithstanding all the other things which are attributed to the fact that you have all these immigrants coming, the immigrant question is a question because of the you have so many non-white people and in many instances non-Christians who have been tied in some way to these countries through colonialism and slavery, and how it's changing the national character, if you will, of these countries. And Spain is perhaps the closest landmass to Africa, European landmass to Africa. So a lot of Africans are constantly struggling to try to get to Spain, to cross over from Morocco, cross over from Northern Africa into Spain. And a lot do. Sometimes, you know, they're stories of journeys that's lasted 2 years, somebody leaving Senegal or somebody leaving West Africa, traveling sometimes with their family and walking like for 2 years to get to a place in Northern Africa, sometimes paying smugglers and what have you exorbitant fees, on taking the most risky trips imaginable to try to get to Spain. And in many instances, in Spain, the Spanish population is growing to really resent this. And the Africans in Spain are portrayed often as criminals, and women as prostitutes, and what have you in the popular media. And so there's a serious kind of animosity in much of Spain toward African people that sometimes is reflected in how individual Spaniards will attack and treat Africans, as well as sometimes state organizations like the police departments, etc. And then, of course, there's this whole question of immigration and the Africans who are coming as undocumented workers, and you know how they are treated by this entire process. So it has some of the same you find same characteristics there as you will find in most of the white world.
Does the question of you were talking about Spain not being in Africa so much as some of the other colonial powers, does that have an impact, do you think, on the question of the identity of African people there in Spain?
I don't know if it does. I think that a lot of people in Africa are not familiar with Spain's legacy of slavery and colonialism. A lot of people who come from Africa to Spain, a lot of people who live in Spain. And then, you know, you have African immigrants who come to Spain, not only from Africa, but from South America. You know, like one of the important organizers of this entity, the acronym, by the way, for this foundation is FECON. One of them is a sister who is from Colombia. And so you find Africans, Equatorial Guinea is probably the largest population of African people there because of the colonial relationship to Spain. But you will also find Africans, as I said, from South America who are there as well. And because you find the same thing of Africans everywhere who for any number of reasons do not recognize the need to overturn the relationship that we have with imperialism, but somehow see them. We find ourselves struggling to be accepted into the societies where we have immigrated to, in which we have been brought as captives. Whether that's in the Americas, North and South America, or whether that's in Europe itself. I remember a few years ago working with Africans in Germany, and I was really struck and distressed by talking with a young African, I think Ethiopian-born African, who was in his teens and her teens, and she was talking about being a part of a youth organization's primary task, goal, was to convince the Germans that they too were Germans. And so, and while that struck me, the reality is that's what most of the Africans in the United States are struggling to be accepted. That's what integration is about, to be accepted as Americans too. And I think that you will find that true in Spain among Africans, to be accepted as Spaniards. I am a Spaniard as well. I am also Spanish, and of course it's objectively untrue. And just as it's untrue that Africans in this country are Americans, it is untrue that Africans who are in Germany are Germans. We are Africans, and we have been captive. And if we haven't been captive directly, there's been an indirect process of pressure on the lands where we are from that's brought us back to these imperialist centers.
I want to let folks know here that you can again participate in this discussion that we're having with Chairman Amalia Shatella about the FECON Congress entitled Africa in the West, the Need for New Relationships. You can call in here at country code 001-727-824-5719, or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. We have a email from BD asking, were there any good presentations or any that stood out at the Congress?
Yeah, I think there were some presentations that stood out. I think despite its limitations, and there were limitations, the presentation from the former director of UNESCO stood out. And one of the reasons it stood out is because it recognized the ongoing movement of resources from Africa to Europe that's been responsible for enriching Europe. And I thought that was important. And so, you know, there was, like, he gave empirically based data to show, you know, like, what that looked like. I thought that was important. I thought the presentation by the sister from Rwanda, who's in the government there, was significant because it too recognized the significance of Africa and African people in history. You know, so I thought those were important, and there were probably others that were important as well, but certainly they were. And sometimes the presentations were significant because of what they didn't say, in terms of what they did not, what they were incapable of recognizing. Even, you know, when people talked about immigration and one of the things that the points that I made in my presentation is that we talk about this issue of immigration and how Africans are in Spain and Africans are in England and Africans are in Europe. And I told them that, you know, we have a saying, you know, in the international African community, that we are here because you were there, you know. So yes, this notion about this one way, wave of invaders, you know, foreign invaders coming to your land is just bogus. And I felt like, even when people were talking about immigration and how it was unfair that African people were being treated, I've really felt like the missing thing was that there was no one saying that the reason Africans are here, are coming to Spain, coming to Europe, risking our lives to get to these various places, is that we are chasing our own resources that just looted Africa. And, you know, even if we've lost memory of the fact that the resources have been stolen from us, we see the wealth, and we see the wealth on television, we see the wealth in magazines, we see the wealth in movies and things like that that exist in Spain, in Europe, in North America, and that wealth is wealth that's been created off resources which have stolen from Europe. And so when we come looking for a better life, what we are doing, objectively speaking, is following our own resources. And I felt that the discussion around immigration needed the ability to say that. And I think if it were able to say that and integrate that kind of discussion into the popular political terrain in Spain and in Europe, it could definitely have an impact on how the Spaniards and the European people themselves were able to articulate their animosity or their interest in the presence of African people in those different locations.
Yes. Well, I also want to ask, Chairman, how did our participation in that Congress, did it impact like future Congresses of that sort, and even how it may have impacted the organizers of this specific Congress?
Well, I think we really made important friends at this Congress, and the organizers in our discussions, they've talked about our playing a role in shaping and helping define, you know, what the next Congress would look like. And this was characterized as the first Congress because they expect that there will be more. I don't remember if it was supposed to be annual or every 2 years that this Congress would happen, but they expect there to be more. I think we played important roles in a number of ways. Our intervention, the what we brought to the discussions, I think was important. Our preparation, our stance, you know, because as I mentioned, you know, there's a whole cadre of Africans who come to these events and again wined and dined, and our stance, you know, because we were serious. We came for political reasons and we were not wined, and we were, you know, we were not involved in that kind of extra, you know, curricular activities. And I think that was something that had to be noticed, that we were quite serious. And so there was a stated interest in our being able to participate again. And we also had the only recording of the entire Congress. So the Congress, what will happen is our recordings of this Congress will become like the official record of the Congress that we present to them. In fact, I think we just sent that to them a week or so ago, so that they can have their own record of the proceedings there. So I thought it was important. And there were other people who, someone else asked if we would attend the Congress. Unfortunately, I don't even have that contact information with me now. I was impressed. We met a young woman who, from the Basque region of Spain, northern Spain. And the Basque, it's a different group. It has its own language, its own culture, and nobody knows exactly where the Basque come from. They are in Spain and France as well, and they've been engaged in a serious struggle for autonomy or for independence. Up to now, it appears that much of their activity has been in the form of bombings and other kinds of terrorist-based, activities. It was interesting just talking to this woman about the kind of prejudice that exists within the Spanish population about the Basque, as well. I just thought it was an interesting, just a sort of a side note. I think that we have established contacts with different people and organizations. There was a really impressive presence by a women's organization from Burkina Faso. It was impressive. I told her about the work we were trying to do to commemorate Thomas Sankara, who was assassinated there in 1987. And she remembered as a student being in school and how Sankara had really raised the morale and the esprit de corps of the people there, and how she wore uniforms and she was taught to, you know, how to use weapons and, you know, to how to shoot and et cetera, as a matter of trying to defend themselves from the imperialists, of course, and the imperialists had already penetrated because, you know, Sankara was assassinated by a force that right there, one of his people who was considered one of his best friends who was in the government there. So that was really good to meet those sisters and to come into contact with the women's organization that they represent. And there were others, too, that I felt like it was important for us to meet. And it was really interesting because by the time we left, there were, different Africans who would say that, speaking of me, would say that, he's our chairman, he's our leader as well. Mm-hmm. And which simply meant that they had accepted a certain aspect of my analysis that talked about Africa having to undergo revolutionary transformation is something that Africans ourselves have to be responsible for.
Yes. And I was talking with Luizi Kinshasa, the party's director of international affairs, on last week. And one of the things that he noted was, the almost immediate change, in forces participating there, when they were hearing your presentation, the how African people would, raise up, and really begin to see themselves in a greater way, and also response on the other hand of Europeans who had never heard an African talking like that to them before.
Yeah, that was interesting, because the person who introduced me and who sat on the podium next to me was a man who is a professor who trains the Spanish diplomats. And when you look at the DVD of me making my presentation, the expression on his face, it was really interesting. But I do think that's really right, what Comrade Luizi was saying. He was a part of our delegation, and about how Africans were liberated in many ways, many of the Africans, by my presentation, and it freed them to have a different kind of articulation than what normally occurs in these events. And to have someone to step forward and say, this is the reality that African people are experiencing, and here is the historical basis for that, and this is what it's going to take to overturn that, et cetera, and to talk about the significance of Africa itself, because with the neocolonial definition of the African reality and the imperialist definition of the African reality robs Africa of its grandeur, of its greatness, of its historical significance, of the fact that even when before Europeans mastered fire, Africans and had, achieved great civilizations. And, I was saying things like that, from my presentation. I was saying how when we met Europe, how Europe was impoverished and diseased and unfree, where Africa was just the opposite, and that as a consequence of this contact, we're now talking about a poor and diseased and unfree Africa, but it came about as a consequence of the invasion of Europe and what Europe has stolen from the rest of us. And I think that was quite helpful for many of the Africans who were there.
I just want to also ask, were there any other things that you felt like the party won out of participating in this Congress?
Well, I think that that as a party itself, I do think it was important for us to be there. I think the contacts that we made with some people throughout the African world were significant, and some people who may be Spaniards themselves. I think it was important because the fact is that just because someone holds an imperialist view, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are imperialist themselves. It may mean that they are ignorant, and there are people, conferences like this, congresses like this, will attract honest, well-intentioned people. Mm-hmm. The problem, of course, is that they can't take us to an honest conclusion. And so, it's not about the good intentions, like as Che Guevara would say, it's not about wishing, but it's about sharing the same fate, whether in victory or death. And the fact is that we have to take off these covers that imperialism imposes on reality and help everybody be able to address the world just as it is. And I think we were able to affect different people who were there in that fashion. That's going to be important for us as a party. And again, I think, the contacts that we made, I think that the stature of our organization, which was recognized by the people who brought us there in the first place, is something that now is recognized by people from various parts of the world, and especially the African world.
Yes. Well, we're about to close this portion of the show, but I wanted to ask if there's anything you'd like to say in closing, Chairman, before we go.
I just think that I would want Africans and others to recognize the significance of the fact that we are two generations away from the revolution, and that we've got two generations of Africans who don't have the benefit of having learned from, having experienced and the presence of people like Nkrumah, Lumumba, Malcolm X, people like Sobukwe out of South Africa. Because these were forces who were shaping our consciousness and shaping the reality that we were living in. The most exciting and earth-shattering times in our history. And in the absence of that, we've been trapped ideologically, politically, in a mire of mediocrity at best mediocrity. That's in this country with the civil rights Negroes, and some of them, you know, not even civil rights Negroes. And what we find is in Africa, in this country, people who've experienced neo-colonial leadership are tired of it, and they're trying to break free from it. Our presence and experience in West Africa, the Africanist movement, et cetera, helps us to understand this. We see people in motion. Our experience in Southern Africa, the things that we have experienced through the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, in what they call South Africa today, in Swaziland through the NNLC, they show us that people are wanting to no longer have any kind of significant regard for these neo-colonial leaders. And then, of course, in this country, if anybody was in Jenna, the thing about Jenna wasn't called by the neo-colonial leaders. Jenna was something that was done of spontaneous activity by people who were not organized and people who, you know, on their internets, et cetera. But once there, thousands of people, we had a shoddy, corrupt, lick-spittle, spineless civil rights leaders, you know, who tried to step in front of that process. And then to hear how masses of African people disregarded that is an indication that this era of people simply succumbing to a neo-colonial leadership and situation is ending. Mm-hmm. But just because people recognize the limitations of neo-colonial leadership does not necessarily translate into recognizing the need for revolutionary leadership. In fact, some people, because they are contemptuous of neo-colonial leadership, are saying that we don't need any leadership. We don't need any organization. We just do it on our own. But of course, we do need leadership. And what we say in the party, of course, is that we need revolutionary transformation, that all the Jinnas in the world, all the rebellions in Sierra Leone and other places, and in Guinea-Conakry, all the struggles around taking land back in South Africa, etc., will not help us if it's not tied to a revolutionary process that is determined to liberate and unite Africa and African people everywhere. So we call on people to join the revolution, join with the African People's Socialist Party, and building a revolutionary process that will unite and liberate Africa and African people throughout the world. Because just being dissatisfied with this stuff is not the same thing as recognizing what it's going to take for us to be free. And so that would be the thing that I would have to say. And I would hope that people, Africans in Spain and Europe, who can hear us. And then, of course, I know that we have a large listenership in South Africa, as it's currently called. We call it Occupied Azania. Should recognize that we have to unite and build a revolutionary process. Africans in West Africa who can hear me should recognize this. And Africans, you know, throughout the world, we have to stop just being a part of some movement and succumbing to spontaneous activities, and then participate in a process that is designed to overturn our relationship with imperialism, so that we can grow our Africa and we can grow a future for ourselves and for our children. And I want to thank you, you know, for having me here. And I look forward to listening to our radio show programming all day, to hearing the rest of what we're going to present from the Spanish Congress. Thank you so much, Uhuru.
Thank you, Chairman. I think, you know, the response that you received in Spain from your keynote presentation is not something new. I think every time that you make a presentation, it's a life-changing experience for the people who are listening. So I appreciate you coming on again, and look forward to the next time. We're going to take a brief break here on Africa Live on WhoRadio.com. We're going to come back with some excerpts from the Congress in Huelva, Spain, Africa and the West. Coming immediately with some excerpts from a panel discussion on the media, and coming, we'll talk a bit more about what's coming after that, the following, for the rest of the broadcast today. So stay tuned for more great programming here on WhoRadio.com.
Got us disgrace. We use a highlight and the pain, but in this case. improvement is the move in unity from Cape Town up to Cairo, Madagascar, and Morocco, and all my peoples in between, like Namibia to Kenya, Somalia, and Gabon, Nigeria, and Liberia. Well, it's on, and all the real Africans in so many different lands, come home. We should not be divided because of our skin, because of some Brit, Africa, America, or Spaniard. We should be united as one. Africans, come home. Israel to Africa.
African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the Emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the US, the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Yabinga Zimbabwe, and we spent the first half of Africa Live talking with Chairman Omali Yeshitela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, about his participation, his experience in the Congress held in Huelva, Spain, entitled Africa in the West. The Congress was held by an organization by the name of European Foundation for North-South Cooperation. It was the first international congress of its kind. We're going to continue playing throughout the day, actually, excerpts and discussion from that congress, and we're going to talk about we're going to have some commentary on that. Right now, what we're going to do is we're going to go to excerpts from a panel discussion and the question and answer from that panel discussion on media, which I think is an important question to deal with, particularly for us, you know, here at WhoRadio.com and in general for African people. Because it is media that forms in many cases our the way we see the world. So we're gonna use excerpts from that panel discussion and we're gonna continue here on Africa Live and throughout the day on WhoRadio.com. So here is an excerpt from the first presentation on that panel discussion.
Buenas tardes. Cuando a uno le piden que hable de África y de Occidente, así en general, tiene la tentación de hacer dos preguntas. Primero, ¿cuántos días tengo para hablar de ello?
The first thing we want to ask is how many days do we have to talk about this topic?
Se le viene a uno la memoria aquello de Chesterton cuando le preguntaban. ¿Qué piensa usted de los franceses? Y él
Chesterton asked, what do you know about the French? And the answer was, I don't know all of them.
Una imagen, un imaginario de África que tiene más que ver con nuestros propios mitos,
that has to do more with our own ideas, more than has to do with
Africa.
In fact, there's not one Africa, there are many Africas.
En la misma tarta,
how can you
Africa del
consider
Sur,
at the same time Madrid, Southern Africa,
con,
Northern Africa,
con
the African
Lagos,
islands, the region of the
Africa
Great Lakes?
Hablando?
Which Africa are we talking about?
Acostumbramos los
and,
europeos,
and why
los españoles,
us Europeans
a diluir
and the Spaniards
la frontera
in particular
de África, que nosotros mismos o nuestros antepasados
forget about the frontiers that were already created in a, I have to say, completely arbitrary fashion by Europeans. If we look at information and media in Spain, we have created an entity called Sub-Sahara.
O argelino es subsahariano.
So, all of a sudden, Morocco and Algeria become Sub-Sahara.
Aguardan monstruos, vuelve a levantarse en las fronteras mediáticas cuando hablamos de una realidad tan diversa.
How can we talk about such diversity and just use simple labels?
Creo que hemos sido unos colonialistas muy chapuceros.
I think we were a very, ni mejores, very poor ni peores,
probablemente que los ingleses, que los holandeses,
perhaps not
que
much
los,
better or worse than the Dutch, the French, the
pero bastante más cutre.
But much more haphazard.
El escasísimo respeto que le tenemos a nuestra propia historia colonial española en América. En la
we think much more about our colonialism in terms of Latin America and the Philippines,
o al gran teatro Cervantes de Tánger, para comprender que si no le tenemos una cierta afición a nuestra propia historia ultramarina, ¿cómo nos va a interesar lo que le pase a otros habitantes
our own history in Africa, how can we
mucho arte y parte
how can we contribute
en la cultura
to,
y en el saqueo, en la convivencia y en la explotación, esto es, en la historia?
In terms of also
recuerdo
the exploitation and the,
yo soy probablemente de la ciudad más africana de Europa, que es
I'm probably the most African city of Europe,
al continente, y también porque se celebró la controvertida conferencia de 1996 sobre el reparto del norte de África, sobre el nuevo reparto colonial del norte de África. Recuerdo en su vieja biblioteca un libro editado por el Instituto de Estudios Africanos
hacia
1948, que tenía el pintoresco título de sobre la capacidad craneana de los negros de Guinea. En el libro se intentaba sostener la tesis
acababa de terminar la Segunda Guerra Mundial y supuestamente el concepto
de raza aria estaba un poco venido a menos. Pues bien, en el libro se intentaba sostener la tesis
book,
de que los blancos
however,
tenían mayor capacidad intelectual que los negros, en este caso guineanos,
basándose
en ejemplos tan pintorescos como que si aún
a very illustrative example saying that if a Ghanaian black person was shown a boxing match, they didn't know it was a boxing match. But if you showed it to a white European of a ritual African dance, then they recognized it. And so this isn't as far away as we think it is. I think that it still exists. In the media, we still help perpetuate this image that Africa, I don't know how to say it, is a big movie stage where Tarzan keeps swinging on the vines to save chains. And it's something that we can just imagine. And then there's another image of Africa from CNN photos, that desperate look of an African who comes to the beach in a boat. And then other people think that there are still those China African dolls. Some of you might not know about that because you're too young, but perhaps Pedro Almodóvar could put them in some kind of movie.
Donde caben todas las,
that people would understand
de una época,
to understand all of those relics from an era that was supposedly over.
Entre una y otra orilla del estrecho. Y en este caso, creo que es una de las pocas ocasiones
I think this is one of our few instances where this lack of information plays in Africa's interest. I think in general, in Africa, there's a better idea of reality of the West in Europe and also the image that we have in the West. And in Spain, this is because our presence in this sub-Saharan world was relatively limited. limited. Our colonial process is basically limited to Equatorial Guinea. There was the legendary inscription of the Andalusian library about what happened in Mali, but many of the people go from Africa end up in France, and they maintain and France has a lot of links linguistically and otherwise that we don't have with Africa and Spain. In the 70s, there were a lot of Africans who came to Spain, and then there were further waves when people were fleeing the dictatorship in Equatorial Guinea. And besides that, not a whole lot. There's also the Western Saharis. And besides that, Africans have basically come to Spain through the refs, and often journalists have not been able to show everything, not just because of the prohibition of the police, but also because of the lack of resources of the journalists, but also because we don't know languages and some very logistical issues like that. Immigration is not a crime, and but oftentimes journalists have not been able to interview the different immigrants because they only speak Spanish. This has led to an interesting phenomenon, namely that this Africa that we have come into contact with on the coast and the airports of Barajas in Madrid and the airports in Amsterdam is a faceless idea of immigration, and there's no history before. In 1985 is when the biggest mass death was known about of immigrants in the Canaries. And we know that since then there have been no less than 12,000 deaths. ETA, in all of its existence, has only killed 834 people. The impact of ETA and all of those fanatical groups is a lot greater than those 12,000 people who have died in the Canarian waters. Why is the death from political terrorism, if you can call it that, given more importance than the death that takes place because of economic terrorism when the poorest people in Africa try to come to quote-unquote paradise? Perhaps because ETA, the people who died, such as the person who died in the demonstration in the metro, are people who have names, they have families, etc. The people who came to the Canarian Islands, we don't know who they are. They have no names. We don't know who to even call on the telephone, and you couldn't if they're from Senegal and Mali.
Always
perceived it just as sort of a statistic, not so much as names, etc. And we should think about that when we try to go beyond understanding African reality beyond just those graphs. In a country such as Nigeria, there's one of the highest rates of economic growth, which a lot of political and police corruption. There is religious violence, religious killing, which has happened almost continuously, such as in the Miss Universe contest. There's also an urgent search for increasing, widening our horizons. Every country's own world, and if we in Spain can't even appreciate our own diversity in Spain, even though we had an attempt to impose dogmatic Catholicism, if we can't even appreciate our own diversity, how could we appreciate another government's, another country's diversity? Spain, in 92, Spain paid as much in Guinea for cooperation and what it did in the Maghreb for strategic planning. Something that we did perhaps in a preemptive way was that Zapatero was making an attempt to reestablish the relations with Africa and reformulate them. In
the summer of 2002,
we had the Africa plan, which was an attempt to shut up the media that was trying to discuss what should be done. We're talking about Spain here. We could be talking about Super Sarkozy, who arrives in Chad, and like Superman, there were 103 children that were made hostage. If that's the way we carry out politics, how can we contribute as those who provide nation? Well, we have to be the voice of our citizens.
De que podía existir aquel periódico de las viñetas de Lucky Luke.
We have this, this idea of having to be independent.
Independientes ni imparciales.
We are not impartial, we're not independent.
Nuestros medios de comunicación y parciales más que del lado de nuestro corazón, de nuestra cartera.
Esa es la descripción genérica del oficio del periodismo en buena parte de Europa y de buena parte de España.
Por lo tanto, si somos dependientes de nuestros medios son dependientes del poder, y el poder actúa como actúa,
quieren que les diga. Then the image that we have will continue to be, unfortunately, of misery and desperation of those who arrive at the beaches. We're still looking at the motorcycle that crosses Africa on the Paris-Dakar. There's an old proverb that I like very much. Lots of silence creates a lot of noise. Let's see that silence finally breaks our eardrums, but I'm afraid that that's not what's going to happen on this side of the Gibraltar Stretch.
Uhuru. I know that some of the translation here is a little difficult to hear in some places because of the volume levels on the Spanish speaking, but we're working with that, and in other places it's much better. I want to note that the presenter here, the speaker here, raises some interesting points. I think, though, something that would help to understand the question, understand the contradictions in the media and its coverage of Africa, which is much of what the discussion is around, can be better understood in the context of understanding society. what we live in is a society that's based. We live in a world that's based on relationships were created through the Europe's attack on Africa and the rest of the world. Relationships that were created in this process of colonizing Africa and stealing all those resources that belong to Africa and her people and other peoples of the world, and establishing Europe and the U.S. As these colonial powers. So you have a world where, you know, there are these relationships between those who oppress and those who are oppressed. And in such a society, when you have it split between where it's split between those who have and those who don't have, as a consequence of those who do have taking everything that belongs to them, then you have these divisions based along class lines, and in such a situation, when you have society was ruled as is the case by a white ruling class who controls every aspect of life, every aspect of social life, then you have these institutions. You have the state that's created, an organization that's created for the purpose of maintaining that relationship. While you have the state that has this purpose, and when we talk about the state, we talk about, you know, the police, the courts, the prisons, school system, all these institutions. You have that, but you also have other institutions that aren't necessarily directly tied to the state, but share in the same interests as the state in maintaining the status quo. The media. The mainstream media, or Western or imperialist media, is such an organization, or such that type of institution. And so, when we talk about the question, when we talk about why Africa is talked about in a bad way in the media, or is ignored in the media, as some would put forward. You're looking at an institution whose intention is to maintain the status quo, because those who own the institution, those who run the institution, have interests that lie with the white ruling class. You have a situation where, you know, media is something that's controlled in the hands of very few, and so what you're looking at when you're looking at the way that the media covers Africa, the way that the media covers African people in general, and what's going on with African people, it's in a way that struggles to maintain the status quo. It's in a way that struggles to maintain this relationship where all of Africa's resources, both human and material, continue to go to build for the U.S. and for Europe. You see a media that justifies this relationship. In the United States, see all the time when a policeman murders an African, what happens is, you know, immediately the media comes out and they show some type of criminal record of this African, shows, you know, anything that they can to say that this African should have been murdered by the police, that this African was a bad guy, is a criminal, and the media plays that role, and imperialist media plays that role in maintaining that relationship, in justifying that relationship. The person who was speaking was talking about political terrorism versus economic terrorism. I think, first of all, an important thing to understand when we're talking about the media and the imperialist media is, you know, like I said, there's an ideological war that is constantly going on all the time, where through these media institutions, the white ruling class is, like I said, struggling to justify this relationship. And it even creates these definitions are designed for the purpose of maintaining that relationship. So they talk about terrorism when they talk about when an oppressed person does something like strap a bomb onto themselves and you know, blows up a place where an oppressor population is at. You know, but they don't talk about terrorism when U.S. government or Israeli government or whatever drops bombs on children and just people in general. So even the terms that we see used in the media, are terms that are meant to reinforce, this justification of this relationship. Even defining this whole question of terrorism is that, you know, because in reality, terrorism, when we talk about terrorism, we're talking about, a form of warfare, you know, where, you know, that's used for the purpose of terrorizing a people, scaring a people out of struggling, out of fighting. You know, it's a form of warfare that's been used in pretty much all wars, you know, and definitely has been used by U.S. and European imperialism. But, you know, so, you know, when we look at, you know, the fact that, you know, when somebody blows up something, an oppressed person blows up something in order to try to get back at their oppressor or try to end this relationship with their oppressor, that's termed as terrorism. But, you know, when, you know, sanctions are placed on places, that kill off children and women and men, from starvation, slow deaths, you know, that's usually not defined as terrorism. But you know, the person who's speaking was raising that question. And I think it's important to understand, I think in order for us to understand that, understand why, you'll see, you know, this great fervor around, the bombing of buildings in imperialist centers. You know, you'll see real emphasis on that, but you don't see anything that tells you about, you know, the years that the U.S. government has been starving the Iraqi people. Is because, you know, the way we understand that is through understanding the fact that that you're living in a class society that's based on this relationship between oppressed and oppressor, you know, where the oppressor controls the media and the oppressor, you know, defines phenomena in the interest of uniting everybody, both oppressed and oppressor, with its terrorizing colonized people. You know, another thing that the person who was speaking raised was this question of consumers of this media having their financial interests spoken to by it, and that's true. You know, the folks who, you know, when you talk about the you know, the ignorance of a white population, say in the U.S., who, you know, doesn't know about what's going on with colonized peoples, doesn't know the things that his government is doing against colonized peoples. It's an ignorance of convenience. You know, it's an ignorance that's informed by their material interest, you know, in maintaining the situation as it is so that their children can have a future at the expense of other people's children, you know, so that is true, you know, yet financial interests are spoken to, that material interests are spoken to by this media, and that's why it doesn't get challenged. You know, it doesn't get challenged by ordinary white folk in general, in not just in the U.S. but in other places. You know, when the media comes out and attacks Africans and other colonized folk. So I think it's important to understand that. We're going to play some more excerpts here from the question and answer period from that the media the panel discussion on media. So here is the continuation of that discussion.
Sí. Sí, vamos mal de tiempo. Han sido precisiones muy esclarecedoras de lo que es África y Occidente, tanto junto como por separado.
Africa and the West put together and separately.
Tendría que decir algo en relación a lo que has comentado, el tema de los periodistas que van a estar fuera de prensa, que no tienen idea de África, no, que no traducen al tema de becarios practicantes. Creo que aquí la inmensa mayoría de quienes hacemos el periodismo
en España pues no tenemos ni idea de lo que ocurre en África, ni de lo que pasa por allí. Bueno, para que me Okay, no, I think you wanted to speak.
Muy de acuerdo con lo que, okay. Todo lo que ha dicho Wui.
Yes, I'm very much in agreement. I'd just like to specify.
Hay periodistas,
unfortunately, there are journalists, including Spanish journalists,
sobre África. No hay más que tomarse a los libros de Javier Martínez Reverte para demostrarnos que al menos desde esta orilla hay alguien que se interesa, ya se interesa históricamente por África. Cada vez más. Cada vez más, afortunadamente, y creo que hay que reflejarlo, se publican en español libros de escritores africanos que hablan en primera persona de África, sin ser Edgar Rice Burroughs, el creador de Tarzán, ni siquiera el magnífico John le Carré, muerto con
Le Carré.
Es que palpita mucha más realidad de África en la novela de John le Carré que en muchas páginas internacionales de prensa, incluyendo
International Press.
Cuando yo dije
Spanish,
otra precisión y termino,
antes
que no tenía pasado colonial en África, excluí evidentemente
a Guinea Ecuatorial
y no me referí evidentemente al caso americano, si de acuerdo, si hablamos de africano. España fue una potencia esclavista, como lo fue Inglaterra, como fue Portugal, como lo fue Holanda, y la historia no puede negarse. España abolió la esclavitud en 1853. Fue uno de los países que más tardó en abolir la esclavitud. Estuvo a punto de abolirla en 1812 durante las Cortes de Cádiz y no pudo ser por la presión de los grandes terratenientes cubanos. Sobre el mundo africano en América, hoy por hoy, habría que preguntarle también, en primer lugar, no solo a nosotros como potencia colonizadora del pasado, sino a los actuales criollos americanos que han asumido desde la independencia el gobierno de las naciones americanas, ¿qué papel tienen los afroamericanos en América del Sur? ¿Cuántos ministros negros han figurado en los gobiernos de Cuba, por ejemplo? Y hablo de un país que, en principio, desde la Revolución abolió cualquier activo oficial de racismo.
Banned any kind of official racism.
Negra, en América, en buena parte de América Hispana, más allá de Susana Vaca en Perú, ya los españoles no estamos allí.
There are no longer Spanish people in South America.
Hispano,
but...
parte de España. Y otra cuestión final sobre
but
lo que
final question
González.
About what's
es verdad que España tiene muy
it's
pocos corresponsales en todo el mundo. Te recuerdo que Televisión Española, que se supone que es la macroempresa mediática española, tiene una corresponsal para toda Asia y el Pacífico. Una sola persona. Pero si nos trasladamos al cuerpo diplomático, el embajador en Australia asume a su vez las tareas de embajador en Nueva Zelanda. En
Australia
apenas
also
tenemos
to,
embajadores.
El cuerpo, New Zealand and Africa we barely have embassies at all.
La verdad requeriría otro pacto de Estado, que me da la sensación que ni el gobierno ni la oposición están intentando de probar la famosa crisis de Chad.
ha puesto a las claras que no solo que no tengamos corresponsales en África,
tenemos que recurrir
al potencial colonial francés
para todo. Por cierto,
creo recordar, no por hundir el dedo en la llaga, quiero recordar a partir de un artículo de la magnífica revista Feiba
sobre
África, que no sé si todavía se sigue editando, porque esa es otra, que los fundadores de Gibraltar León, cuando lo fundaron ya no
eran esclavos, ya eran libertos. Pero eso es otra cuestión, evidentemente habían sido
esclavos y de qué manera, como los fundadores de la cofradía, fueron negritos de la Semana Santa de Sevilla, que sí, que es la más antigua de la ciudad,
en Sevilla,
si no mal recuerdo.
Did have a historical importance. If there's another quick statement anyone would like to make. Yes, I would like to respond very quickly to Aboué's speech. Just quickly to say that I definitely agree. I do agree with the conclusions that he said as far as what we need to do differently, that information needs to be focused more on Africa. I completely agree. I just, however, would like to take a slight issue with his diagnosis about information apartheid. He would like an African point of view on Africa. I, however, am not certain that there really is an information apartheid, because that kind of sounds like a conspiracy theory against Africa. I'm not sure that it's that's really the way things are working, at least not in my opinion. I would also like to say that I don't think there's counter-information, misinformation about Africa. I would like to say, for example, is information on Mauritania the same that we get about Kenya, unless if Senegal and Kenya have identical issues on the international scene? I don't think so. Information has to be a responsible. So I think that our good intentions for Africa shouldn't make us too dogmatic when we're looking for solutions, because we can say Africa is not treated well, it's not perceived well on the international scale, that's true, but we could, in addition, from just going from there, go sort of beyond that and say that Africa must be shown as magnificent and positive no matter what. And that would be bad, because it would keep us from seeing reality. So let's please remember that showing information is the consequence of political and economic forces, and since Africa does not have enough weight on that scale, it's not shown enough. But once Africa is much more significant in the political and economic arenas, we could imagine that Africa would be treated in a much more fair and way. Just very quickly,
the discussion that's happening here is an interesting one. I think that there's some discussion here where they're talking about, you know, needing to focus the media on Africa, the media needing to focus more on Africa, and even to define Africa in a better way. But I think the thing that we have to understand again is that focusing is that our oppressors will define the world in their own interest. Focusing imperialist information, focusing imperialist media on Africa will not be a solution. It's not a solution because the reality is whenever our oppressor defines the reality, they do so in their interest. And if we continue to rely on our oppressors to define the world for us, then we'll never be free. You know, if a slave defines the world based on the definitions given to him by his master, then the way he will see the world is in a way where he should remain a slave, because that's the master's interest. That's the way the slave master defines the world. The slave master will say that it's good for a slave to be a loyal slave, to be a good slave, to never rebel, to do his work diligently. That's in the slave master. That's the truth for the slave master. That's the truth for the slave master, that the slave should be a good slave, should not ever rebel or should work until he dies. You know, that is the truth for a slave master. But as a slave, if we take on that definition, then we will work till we die. We will continue to build for our slave master. We will continue to build for our oppressors and never be free. That's the reality, you know. So the focusing imperialist media on Africa is not a solution. It's not a solution. The reality is our solution must be to define the world for ourselves. Our solution must be to have our own media apparatuses that define the world for ourselves in the interests of the African working class, in the interests of the oppressed, because our definition of the world, if it's to be in our interest, has to be opposed to the definition of the world given to us by our oppressors. Our definition of the world as a slave, you know, our definition of slavery should be a terrible institution that should be destroyed at all costs. You know, our definition as a slave, you know, of the slave master and our relationship to him must be that the slave that we have to, as the chairman of Mali Shatella says often, is we have to kill the slave master and destroy the system of slavery. If media does not tell us that, then it's not serving our interests. If, you know, information in general, because when we're talking about media, when we're talking about this whole struggle of ideas, it's not just something that's presented to us in the news, in the newspapers, in the TV. You know, it's presented to us in every aspect of society. You know, even, you know, in the U.S. you'll pass by billboards, you know, when driving down the street or when walking down the street, and those billboards will do the same thing that the news does, the same thing that the television shows do, justify things as they are. And the reality is that we have to be able to see those things, and recognize that that's not in our interest. We have to be able to have our own media institutions, that define for us our own reality, that define for us a reality based on the need for the slave to kill the slave master and destroy the system of slavery. You know, there was another statement that was made by someone that was saying that Africa shouldn't be defined as magnificent, that would be a false thing, you know, to do. And I think my view is this. I think that we have to define the world as it is. It's in our interest as the African working class not to define the world and not to create some definitions that are false, like our oppressors, not some definitions that make us feel good. You often hear, people talk about, or at least I often hear it in the U.S., and in other places, you'll hear Africans talk about we was kings and queens, and they call each other king or queen and all these types of things. But even still, if it's a false definition, defining it, then it doesn't serve us. We can't have false definitions, because it's in, unlike our oppressors, who have to have us believe a lie, have to have us believe that this society is just and that it's permanent. Unlike our oppressors, we need to understand the world as it is, because it's in our interest not to keep it the way it is, but to change it. To change the world. And you can't change the world if your understanding of the world is not based on the world as it is. It's not a concrete definition of the world. So in one sense, I agree with what that speaker was saying, what the person was saying, in terms of not defining the world falsely. But I think we also have to understand history. And we have to understand that Africa was not always the way it is today. And even today, notwithstanding the poverty, the misery that African people face in Africa and everywhere else around the world that we are, our Africa is still rich. Our Africa is still rich, and the U.S. and Europe are still living off of the resources that they're stealing out of Africa. I mean, millions are stolen out of places like Sierra Leone alone in one resource, in diamonds, in other places, you have other resources, coltan and bauxite and uranium and all these types of resources, gold, all these resources that continue to feed Europe and Europeans. While African people remain poor. So I think we have to understand Africa is magnificent. Africa is magnificent, and African people are magnificent people. We have been. We have done great things. We have given, brought civilization to the world, and it's important that we understand that so that we can understand, what we can do. We have to understand what we have done to be able to understand what we can do. So that our children, don't come to the determination that, as a result of having been taught in school that all we were was slaves, so that they won't come to the determination that all we can be is slaves. If we know, that we've done great things, that we brought civilization to the world, that Africa is such a rich place, then we'll recognize that we can be a free people. We can control our own lives, and we can, and that our Africa is the place where we need to be, is the place that holds a future for African people. Our media, has to tell us that. Our ideology has to tell us that. Our ideology has to inform us, to take back our Africa. To unite our African people everywhere around the world when we're spread, and to end this relationship with Europe, and U.S. imperialism, in this parasitic relationship where everything that we do goes to build for them, while our people remain poor, and in just miserable conditions. We got a few more minutes, and I just want to let folks know that this is a special day of programming for us, here at AhuaRadio.com. All day, you're gonna be hearing excerpts and analysis from the European Foundation, for North-South Cooperation's first international, Congress of, on Africa and the West, the need for new relationships. This was a Congress that was held, November 14th to the 16th, 2007 at the University of Huelva in Huelva, Spain. And I'm gonna let you know what all we're gonna be doing here. Next up on the Who Remove, you're gonna hear excerpts from workshops on the question of immigration, at the African and West Congress in Huelva, Spain. Hosts Kobina Bantushango, and MPDUM President Ivory Mohammed. will be joined by comrade Benjamin Prado of Union del Barrio, the Mexican Liberation Organization that is leading the struggle for the national democratic rights of Mexican people on both sides of the illegitimate southern border of the United States. That's going to be coming up right after this show on Who Are on the Move. Then following that, on Colonialism is Bad for Your Health, that show will review some excerpts from the panel discussion on cooperation at the Africa and the West Congress. And that panel dealt with approaches to health, environmental, food, and economic development issues in Africa. And the host, Iyapo Ngina, will be joined by Dr. Aisha Fields, the physicist, who is the coordinator for the development and health projects of the African Socialist International, the projects of the All African People's Development and Empowerment Project. So tune in for that. And then following that show, following Colonialism is Bad for Your Health, will come the show Solidarity, Not Charity. And then this show will bring you the plenary speech delivered at the Huelva Spain Congress, by Federico Mayor Zaragoza, who is the former Director General of UNESCO, and the host, Harris Daniels, will be joined by African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess to discuss the role and responsibility of white people to organize for the return of the stolen resources of Africa and build support for the African Revolution worldwide. So we got some great programming today. So if you've missed any of it, first of all, if you missed any of it up to now, you'll be able to check it out in our archives in the coming days. And on top of that, if you can check it out by listening on the phone to WHO Radio. You can tune in by phone at in the U.S. at 1-425-905-1825. That's the U.S. number to call and listen to WHO Radio. Or you can, in the U.K., dial 0870-068-4407 to call and listen to WHO Radio. And following this today's broadcast, you'll be able to hear, even if you missed it, you'll be able to hear what you missed. Do that and stay tuned for more great programming here on WHOradio.com.
Africa, unite, 'cause we're moving right out of Babylon, and we're going to our father's land. Yeah, how good and how pleasant it would be before God and man, yeah, to see the unification of all Africans. Children of the Rastaman. We are the children.
so many things that's held us down. But now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go. And where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting our show together. We're polishing up our act. And if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore.
Don't you let nothing, nothing stand in your way. I want you to listen, listen to every word I say, every word I say.
Trying to make it, they only push you aside. They really don't have nowhere to go. Ask them where they're going, they don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're gonna put our show together, gonna polish up our act now. And if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore.
Uhuru, welcome to Uhuru on the Move on uhururadio.com. We are starting our show today, but first we would like to remind our U.S. and U.K. listeners that you can listen to Uhuru Radio even if you can't be near your computer, because you can call in over the phone. If you're located in the U.S., the phone number that you can call is 425-905-1825. And that'll give you access to Uhuru Radio over your telephone. If you are located in the UK, you can call 0870-068-1125. 4407 to hear Uhuru Radio over the telephone. Today on Uhuru Radio, we're presenting a very special broadcast featuring excerpts and analysis from the European Foundation for North-South Cooperation's first international congress. This congress was entitled Africa and the West, the Need for New Relationships. This congress was held November the 14th through the 16th, 2007, just last month, at the University of Huelva in Huelva, Spain. Four members of the Uhuru movement participated in this event as a part of our work to influence international debate over the relationship of Africa with the white world. African People's Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela was the keynote speaker at this international congress, which included participation and presentation from dignitaries such as Frederico Mayor Zaragoza, the former Director General of UNESCO. Also, Ms. Aminata Traore was present, the ex-Minister of Culture and Tourism in Mali. Ms. Angelina Muganza, the Secretary of State for the Development of Training and Labor in Rwanda. And Dr. Sami Nair, Professor of Political Science at the University of Paris. The Congress was attended by African and European government policymakers, diplomats, academicians, social workers, and activists. The program included workshops on funding for African development projects, attacks on African immigrants in Europe, and the white world's historic debate to Africa. While acknowledging the white world's legacy of slavery, colonialism, and the exploitation of the natural resources of Africa, the Congress generally reflected the European view towards Africa as a poor, backwards country requiring the charity of white nations. Chairman Omali Yeshitela intervened in discussions throughout the three-day conference, stressing the reality that Africa is not poor. Africa is the richest continent, and Africa is being looted. In his keynote presentation, he called on Congress participants to not look at Africa with pitying eyes, but look at Africa with eyes of outrage. So I'm happy to be here with our special broadcast on Uhuru on the Move. We're going to present some excerpts during our show on the topic of African immigration presented at the conference and giving an analysis from the African and the Mexican perspective. You're here currently with our host, Kobina Bantu-Shango. Welcome to the show, Kobina.
Uhuru, Comrade President.
Uhuru. And myself, Ivory Muhammad, President of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. We have a guest as well, Benjamin Koppel of Union Del Barrio, who is a member Union Del Barrio is a Mexican liberation organization that's based in San Diego, California, that defends the national rights of Mexican people and also is united in the struggle to end the attack on African people worldwide. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ivory, and thank you, Kobina, for having me.
Thank you.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. Okay, so before presenting our first excerpt that we would like to give an analysis on, I would just like to ask Comrade Benjamin about your organization. If you could tell us a little bit about Union Del Barrio, its background and its purpose.
Sure thing. Thank you. And I want to, first of all, appreciate and recognize the being invited to Uhuru Radio, which is the voice of the International African Revolution. We believe that this initiative that Uhuru Radio is doing to inform the African community, but as well as the general public, on this crisis that we're living as humanity and trying to overturn our relationships with this oppression that we see every day in our community. So I want to thank you and appreciate you, Uhuru Radio. The organization which I represent, Union del Barrio, is a organization which was founded in 1981 in San Diego, And it was a organization that was founded on the premise that we as a Mexican community have a right to be self-determining, that we have a right to organize ourselves and defend ourselves from the hostile aggression of the United States and the racism of its settler population. And it was founded on the heels of the Chicano power movement of the 60s and 70s. Many of the people who founded the organization were veterans of the Chicano movement. And we recognize the organization, Unión del Barrio, that we as Mexicans living in the geographic territory of the Southwest, which is California, Nevada, Texas, Arizona, Utah, Colorado, that is a territory which was stolen from the Mexican people, the geographic territory that belongs to the indigenous peoples of the Americas, and which was stolen from us by the United States government in the War of Aggression in 1848. And so our objective is to continue to build our struggle as a people to reclaim our land, reclaim our resources, and put the wealth that is ours in benefit, so that it can benefit our people and our community. We believe in a concept and philosophy that says that those that work the land own the land. And if we look at the workers, the people who actually built the infrastructure, that built the and worked the lands that feed us every day, it is the workers. It is the Mexican laborers, not only in the field, and we see it also in all sectors of the industry in the U.S. Southwest, that we are the ones who are creating tremendous wealth and making sure that other people live well, while at the same time, we as the Mexican people are living in some of the worst conditions in the barrios and ghettos what we consider the internal colonies of the settler state, which is the U.S., and we don't live well. We don't have a decent wage from which to live, to feed our families and clothe our families. In fact, we see that we take care of other people before we take care of ourselves, and making other people's lives comfortable while we ourselves live in misery and poverty. So our philosophy is, again, to organize workers, organize the Mexican community for a reunified socialist Mexico.
Okay, thank you for that that overview. Let's see, we're going to go to the first excerpt from the Congress, the first International Congress. This excerpt is going to be speaking about world views toward Mexican immigrants and African immigrants, Mexican immigrants, so-called Mexican immigrants into the U.S. and African immigrants into Spain, and how society views this. So we're going to go to this clip, and then we'll come back to give an analysis on what was presented at the Congress.
La investigación tiene la intención de hacer una investigación comparativa entre la similitud que existe entre el inmigrante africano en Andalucía y el inmigrante mexicano en Arizona.
The intention of the study is to compare the two types of immigration, the Mexican immigration into Arizona and the African immigration into Andalusia region in Spain. We want to focus this study on the mass communication issue and how newspapers and media handle the immigration issue. We studied two different newspapers in both Arizona and Spain. The idea is to see that the political differences between the newspapers. In Arizona, we found a very conservative newspaper and one that it was more liberal. In the Spanish case, we found one that it was very conservative and another a liberal as well. We studied 172 cases in Arizona and 132 cases in Spain between the years 2004 and 2007. 111 cases were in the conservative newspaper, the remaining cases were in the liberal one. The conservative newspaper was in the city of Phoenix, Arizona, which is a bigger city than the newspaper of Tucson, that is more liberal. In Spain, 86 cases were in the conservative newspaper, the remaining were in the liberal one. We picked a reader from Spain to read both the Spanish newspapers as well as the newspapers from Arizona. We did the same case in Arizona, picking a volunteer who read the newspapers from Arizona and the newspapers from Spain. We wanted to see if the newspapers were handling news in a positive, negative, or neutral way. One of the articles mentioned that the immigrants were useful for the commerce of the particular area, but they brought a lot of stereotypes about immigrants about being bad people. So the conclusion is that the media always starts the news by saying that immigrants are necessary for the economy, but as you read on, they start mentioning all the negative aspects of immigration. After the responses of the volunteers in Spain and Arizona, we found that the way to handle news among newspapers was very similar between Arizona and Spain. We continued the study with more volunteers in both places, and the results were that the orientation of newspapers in handling the immigration news were 22% neutral. And we divided the results in different categories. We divided in economics, in social, and culture. The results of the economics aspect in Arizona offer 40% positive, 40% neutral, and 20% negative. In the cultural aspect, 65% was negative and the rest was neutral in Arizona. Newspapers in Arizona don't really cover a lot of aspects and demographics. We only found two articles. In Arizona, the areas of commerce that have been favored by immigration are basically the construction and so the image of the people on immigrants is very negative because they have not been able to find jobs in other fields. It has been very difficult to find supporters of the immigration reform in the United States. It is a conflict between employers who want to hire these immigrants and the rest of the population who are against them. We find a lot of political examples like McCain in Arizona who is a conservative, but has a lot of businesses with immigration. So he's been benefited from this immigration phenomenon. In terms of social issues, the results between Arizona and Spain are very similar. In Spain, almost all the issues with immigrants are on African immigrants. In the United States, the situation of Africans is not really mentioned that much because the African immigration in Spain is older. So nowadays, the discrimination in Spain is against Africans, while in the United States is more towards the Hispanic population. And after September 11th in the United States, it switched the discrimination issue towards the Islamic and Arab population. So in conclusion, mass media in Spain is more focused on the African immigration, while in the United States is more focused on the Hispanic immigration. But if we compare the four newspapers that we studied, both liberal and conservative, we find similar results, and the results are very negative.
Okay, Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. Okay, so after listening to this excerpt, it's obvious that at least in